our guest from the National Department as well as the invited guests. They are invited guests. Guests there's a set of guests. There are those that are always there, uninvited, but they are always there. And then the other set, there's another set which are invited guests, but they are also part of the family. But they are not always with us, but they are part of this family. But they are not always with us. Amongst us, we have got FFC. As well, we are expecting the law, what is this? Community Law Center from the UWC. As we all are aware that Parliament is open for any public participation, more especially when we have got these crucial debates or discussions in Parliament that involves the budget and so forth. People who are interested to come before the Portfolio Committee, they are more welcome if they've requested to come before the Portfolio Committee. So the UWC Law Society is one of the public that has requested to come and make an input into the strategic plan of the department. FFC is not not for the first time that they come to our meetings. They always support us when we invited them, and they present some policy perspectives. They present their observations as well as their recommendations, most importantly to the National Treasury, but they are opening, in fact, they have a right to come before the Portfolio Committees. If they feel that there's something, they can request to meet with the Portfolio Committee if they feel that there's something they would like to draw the attention in terms of policy development or legislation. And at the same time, as we are playing oversight, we have got the right to invite them. So today, as we are busy with this process, we felt that it is very important that we share, they come and share with us what are the issues, the observations on the strategic plan of the department for this current financial year. And at the same time, they can raise any other issue whilst they can take that opportunity, whilst they have this platform, and raise other issues that we have not yet observed. But I think one issue, I think they can also assist us. We as the Portfolio Committee, I believe that we have been discussing that there's a function that has been transferred to Human Settlements by the President. And as the Portfolio Committee, we have discussed that we don't feel it, that this mandate is taking off as we believe that it could be. But at the same time, we are not blaming the department. But our intention is to ensure that we assist the department. We play a supportive role to the department in ensuring that this function should take off. There can be a situation where the president delegates a function, and then that function it will take years to come out to come off the ground. So We would like FFC to also assist us. And what other bog us is that this RIP, if members have read the National Treasury documents, there's a decision, because I will take it as a decision, because the National Treasury has taken a decision to transfer the grant, the rural household grant, to COCTA. So I think all of us, we were not clear. Yabana, if you have got no understanding of the issues, because I was trying to think and in my mind, what does that mean? Does that mean that the department, the National Department of Human Settlements, has failed to implement this decision? But I'm not saying it is that is the case. That is what we are thinking. Why? What should be the reason for transferring this grant to COCTA by 2014? So I think we still have time to discuss this as the portfolio committee, together with the department, and make some recommendations if we feel that that grant should remain. Because I'm still feeling that that grant should remain to human settlement. So if we don't support the department, we don't discuss these things, and we get to the deepest, to this problem on what could be the cause of that. And then what are the implications? What does it mean? What image does it bring to the department? And the function, what about the function itself? Because we still believe that the function was transferred without resources, just a function. So what could be done in making sure that this function is coming up? And as the portfolio committee, we have got a responsibility to oversee that those things are happening. So at the end of the day, we are to be blamed. What role have we played as the portfolio committee? We need to play a critical role in ensuring that we assist, we support the department in every effort. With those viewers, you are more than welcome. It's just a homework. It means that we still have a lot to do. Mr. Kumar, you are more than welcome in this portfolio committee. But I think what we can do, let's make a quick introduction so that we know who else who is here into this committee today. Honorable Kumar, can you start?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. I'm Gloria Gorman, member of this committee.
Good morning.
Good morning, Roy Bula, member of this committee.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Nokaya Mnisi, member of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Makosa Zananjobe, member of the committee.
Good morning. I'm Patty Duncan, member of this committee.
Good morning. Stevens Mukhalapa, member of the committee.
Good morning, Sasha Peters, the Financial and Fiscal Commission.
Morning. My name is Ramos Mabuga. I'm from the Financial and Fiscal Commission.
Bongani Kumalo, Chairperson of the Financial and Fiscal Commission.
My name is Eddie Rakabi. I'm also from the FFC.
Good morning. My name is Fabel Mtandato from the FFC.
Morning, Nyameko Mbengo from the Human Settlements National Department.
Sam Arinsa, the National Department of Human Settlements.
Neville Cheney, National Department of Human Settlements.
Rui van der Walt, National Department of Human Settlements.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Sean Solomon from the National Department of Human Settlements.
Good morning, everybody. Mili Lekaba from the Department of Human Settlements, Assistant to the Director General.
Morning, Members Chair. I'm Andrew Hickstein from Finance Fiscal Commission. Good morning. I'm Tokozani Nohoshi with the Research and Development Unit. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Christopher and I'm from Sevenet. From Sevenet.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Diana M. Chemeni. I'm from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Listen, honorable members, it's always a pleasure on behalf of the Commission to indicate our appreciation for the opportunity to come and brief this portfolio committee. I think in terms of the request that we got from the chairperson, we are supposed to present a brief on the budget analysis and the annual performance plans of the department and its entities, and also try and present an overview of the past trends. Following on your remarks, Chairperson, and a brief meeting that I had with you this morning, I will also add a few remarks at the end of this presentation on the issue of the rural household infrastructure grant and what the views from the Commission around that program and its future basically are. In terms of the presentation, I think the outline basically is that we will look at the strategic outcomes of the department and then give a few remarks on the key programs and expenditure outcomes per program. We will then look at the integrated household and human settlements development grant, and also we then focus on the public entities. We'll then make reference to some of the recommendations that the Commission made with a view to making an initial assessment of how those have actually fed into the department's process, because in terms of the government's response for the 2012 budget, we know what recommendations from the Commission were accepted by government, and we try to check whether these have actually been fed into the budget process of the department. I think on the whole, we see some positive development in that area. That's what I can say up front. And then last year, we did indicate to the committee that we would be conducting a set of public hearings. Unfortunately, it was probably at a time of the year when the committee schedule did not allow for members to actually attend those public hearings. They were held, nevertheless, quite successfully. I think a whole range of stakeholders, including the department, attended those public hearings, and some of them made submissions. We did receive the chairperson's submission as well on that. We have since put together a report that tries to capture the key issues that need to be addressed, and we have also put together a team of experts that will be working on the problems that were identified, and we'll be having a second set of public hearings, I think sometime in August, which will take the form of a report back and preliminary recommendations on how to deal with some of the issues that have been identified and that will be worked on. And so the invitations for that will be sent quite shortly with the specific Chairperson, with your agreement, is to hand over the presentation to my research team here to take you through the details of the presentation. I think Isabelo, you are the one going first. Okay. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much. I will start with looking at the strategic outcomes of the National Department of Human Settlements. Basically, what we've seen on the strategic outcomes is the four focus areas or goals, which the first one speaks to the acceleration of delivery of housing opportunities. And then second one, improving access to basic services. Third one, improve property market. And the last one, which is seeks to use more or utilize land efficiently. Looking around these outcomes, we do appreciate, because we've seen that department has its goal to continue providing housing opportunities to all, especially more the poor in South Africa. And they have set some targets on a yearly basis to say this year we need to achieve around 220. While we appreciate this as the FSC of this goal, we also feel that the department appears to be driven by its target of 400,000 units by 2014. And as a result, the targets that are being set by the department per annum are too high. It fails because looking at the way in which it has been achieving these targets going backward, it has been delivering around 161 housing units per annum. And then we are believing that probably they are driven by this goal, wanted to achieve this, and then setting the yearly targets high. But other issues, we'll discuss them as we go on. I'll go on to the fourth goal, which is more efficient land use or utilization. And here, we support the department on this one, because it's one of the initiatives that we thought as FSC should be undertaken by the department, specifically because of the kind of issues and pressure that department face or in terms of housing delivery needs, especially around the cities where we see more people residing or moving towards the cities and the rate in which informal settlements have been formed. And then utilizing land efficiently would play a major role, and then it shows that the department is planning ahead now to say in 20 years to come, probably we have a big shortage of land, more than we have it now, and then we need to utilize that land efficiently. And one of the developments here around this efficient utilization of land will be discussed, because we've seen some results already. On the programs, key programs that we have, we've seen that department has five key programs, of which the major one, which has to do with the housing delivery, is program number four, which is housing development finance. And in terms of the resources, we have seen that more than 90% of the allocation to the department is consumed by this program. Hence, in the following slides, we have zoomed in this program, and we believe that it's a key program again, because it impacts directly on the number of units that have been delivered. But I must also mention upfront here to say this is the issue that we highlighted even last time before this committee, that in some instances we face difficulties if we are analyzing performance of the department because of the way in which they report. And even now, we try to do some analysis, but we are constrained by the reporting format because the complete number of completed units are still reported under completed units and units under construction, of which it's difficult to ascertain clearly to say out of this 161,000, probably 60,000 are the ones in progress and these are the ones that have been completed. We still have that challenge. Looking closer, okay, here I've already talked about this to say it consumes more than 90%. In fact, here we go on to the expenditure outcomes per program. And okay, let me note that this, because we didn't have data for the year that has just ended, and then we used the past performance of 2010-11 to do this analysis. What we've seen here, overall spending by the department during this financial year 2010-11 has been close to 100%. That is, was standing at 98.8%, which we believe that it's a good outcome. However, what we wanted to highlight here for the committee is that the main project or the main program, which is housing development, where delivery of houses falls under. By this year, spent close to 100%, that was 99.7%, which was a good average spending. And the program, which is housing planning, the program, which is strategic relations and governance, remained under spending at 60% during this year under review year, that was review. Okay. However, what we needed to highlight here is that I think I've covered this slide. What we needed to highlight is that this spending that was achieved, especially on integrated housing and human settlements grant, which is close to 100%, has been achieved because there were some reallocations that were made, taking some funds from other provinces, because there were some indications at that time that they would underspend to other provinces that were spending. Hence, the spending was close to 100%. Okay, in terms of performance of the integrated housing and human settlements development grant, what we've done here, we just took these four financial years and look at the number of planned units by the department, which if we look at 2020-09-10, the plan was to deliver about 250,000, 2020, 2010-11, and 2020 for 2011-12. And now looking at this target that department set here, comparing to the actual number of houses that are completed or reported under construction. Now, we've seen that, for example, in 2009-10, they reported that they delivered about 161. And then that figure within brackets just indicates to say they fall short of X, this number, to achieve the set target that they set in the beginning of the year. And looking at going forward, you see that there's been, for 2010-2011, the number delivered was 121. And then now that shortfall again was increasing compared to the previous year. And for the last financial year, this report is up to December, that is three quarters. There's one quarter which is outstanding, but by that time they reported that they have delivered about 88,000. And then again, looking at this to say, one can say, even on this year, last year's performance, you could easily say, by just one quarter, there's no way that they would be able to deliver the difference between 220 and 88. Okay, looking at the last one, this figure is for three quarters.
up to December. Then there was one quarter remaining, of which within that quarter, we believe that it was not possible for the department to deliver the difference between the 220, which is the target, and So this slide just shows what I talked about previously to say some funds were relocated from other provinces that were showing signs of understanding to those that were spending. And then this is overall performance. To say some performed very well after that. For example, you look at KZN, that figure, 102%, which means they overspent. But here we need to note that they overspent after some funds were taken from them. Okay, what are we noting here from this previous slide is that the grant integrated human housing, human settlement grant consistently in terms of the targets, the department has been falling short of reaching the housing units. And then here one can question, we don't have a definite answer. It's either the targets are set too high and resources are not there to make sure that these targets are met. And also, if you look here, what happened is that the number of housing units delivered decreased even when allocations are increasing rapidly. You see that there's growth in the allocation, but the number of houses, housing units delivered continue to decrease. For example, here, we just put an example to say housing units delivered decreased from 161, that was 2010 financial year, to 121 units in 2010-11. And looking at performance of 88 by the third quarter, there was a possibility that for the last financial year again, maybe it could even be less than what we see here for 2010-2011. Okay, I think I've already talked to this slide to say that picture that you saw there is because some funds were reallocated, taken away from FS and KZN, and then reallocated to these three provinces. The issue that we're raising here is just to say, while this was done to ensure service delivery, relocating some funds from those provinces, which we see that they will under spend to those that are spending, it's good for service delivery, but it's not clear whether plans were established to address capacity challenges in these provinces where funds were moved. And then what we are putting here as one of the programs that should be looked at carefully is Program 5, Strategic Relations, because if you look at the spending, they underspent by 40% and by 14% in 2010-2011 and 2009-2010 respectively. And then these are the reasons to say why department believes that there has been this understanding. But that is a program that needs to be looked at. Okay, in terms of public entities, in the past few years and even currently, there's a lot of rationalization of public entities that report to human settlements, and this has resulted in the decrease in the numbers of the housing entities under the National Department of Human Settlements. And then we've seen the closure of two Belisha homes, of which the functions were transferred to housing development agency, not authority agency, and the Social Housing Foundation. Some functions are transferred to the for Child Housing Regulatory Authority. And then there has been a development of CERCON, and currently National Department of Human Settlements in the process of consolidating other entities, those three entities. This is allocation to public entities. As you can see, because of the rationalization that is taking place, there are some gaps in terms of data, in terms of allocation going forward, because of some are being closed, some are in the process of being closed, etc. So it's difficult to undertake in-depth analysis on this one. Okay, here we will put the performance of some of these entities. For example, the NHBRC performance between 2008-09 to 2010-11 is that about 409,000 homes were enrolled and new builders were registered. Under SHRA, which is Social Housing Regulatory Authority, they have processed the number of applications as they come for accreditation. Under NACHA, there have been a decrease in revenue and it's attributed to the market slowdown. NHFC again, between 08, 09, 11, 12, there's been a decrease in number of loans that have been dispersed, again attributed to the slowdown in the economy. Okay, I will hand over to my colleague here, Eddie.
Okay, I'm going to do a presentation on the last year recommendations and the public hearing and the discussion that happened at the public hearing last year. Last year, the FFC made a recommendation that government should actively and pursue development of a more spatially compact urban form for cities by developing and adopting appropriate policies and financing instruments, particularly including a wider use of development charges, public transport subsidies that target high-density and low-income areas, fiscal incentive for urban land development projects located within existing urban form, and fiscal incentive for to promote densification and infill development. The response we got from government was positive, and in this regard, we're also seeing some developments within the department We've seen recently the relaunch of the 512 newly built flats for the residents in Soweto, the Jabulani Hospital. And we believe that the fiscal incentive can be used to accelerate this kind of initiatives. And at least there are some positive developments with regard to this recommendation. The other recommendation we made that the government should conduct a broad-based review of the efficacy and current housing finance arrangement, especially for it to meet the housing demand with the context of creating sustainable and more compact human settlement. And the response again here was positive, and the National Department for the Human Settlement Department is currently undertaking the review of the entire built environment, I think, and we think that this is a positive especially with regard to the recommendation that we mentioned. In 2011, as the acting chairperson has said, the FFC decided to hold several public hearings, among which one of them was their public hearing on housing. And part of the reason why the FFC hosted the public hearing was to improve the interaction between the stakeholders within the housing sector, to provide a platform for all key stakeholders to share ideas and engage stakeholders and use their input, more importantly, to inform our research agenda and development of our recommendations. The first hearing, as the deputy chair said, was hosted as a partnership between the FFC and Ekurhuleni Metropolitan Municipality on the 30th and 14th of October last year. Some of the key issues that we really wanted to explore in the public hearing was to understand the extent to which the demand for housing in South Africa is indicated by the backlogs, the informal settlement, and the backyard dwellings, but also to present and debate issues on housing affordability for individuals qualifying for subsidized houses and those that fall in the gap market and those that can afford mortgage bonds, as well as understanding the demand and need for a well-located land to respond to the demand for housing. And lastly, to understand the key drivers for land and housing demand. Quickly, just the issues that came out from the public hearing, especially is that the delivery of, there is insufficient delivery of housing in terms of scale and sustainability issues. And I think Sabelo has already mentioned this, because there's a persistent inability to meet the set target for the housing units required. And stakeholders agreed with the FFC that delivery of around 3 million fully subsidized housing since 1994 is still insufficient, if you consider that we still have a backlog of about 2 million, and it's growing rapidly on an annual basis. Just to avoid repeating what Sabine has already mentioned, but this issue came out strongly about increasing budget and the increasing budget that has not resulted in the fast tracking of the delivery of houses. And the observation that the backlogs that we see today remains at the level similar to that we had in 1994. And what was very important again is that as the cost increases over time, more subsidies are required to deliver on the promises, which makes the current housing finance policies sustainable, because the cost of delivering houses is increasing almost on a daily basis. So if you prolong the time by which you want to eradicate the backlog, you actually make the fiscal requirement for achieving this backlog even more. So over time, it may not be affordable for the state to afford or even to eradicate the backlog. Again, the issue that also came out was that the fully subsidized housing creates perverse incentives and other related problems. And this is more an issue about entitlement, where people anecdotally sit and wait for government to provide them with houses without taking initiative to provide for themselves. I think this is another issue that came out very strongly. And obviously it increases the level of the backlogs, because you have people who could potentially build their own houses deliberately waiting or not doing anything for themselves, waiting to be provided with social housing. Again, the other issue that came out strongly was the issue of poor data and understanding of the housing demand, because we don't have good data. It's very difficult at this moment to say that the backlog is at this level or at that level. While the figure that is going around is 2 million, is 2 million housing units, we're not necessarily sure, because partly because the data that we get out of the Department of Housing, it's not entirely correct, but also because we don't understand the demand for housing. Right now, we classify everybody that earns below 3,500 who does not have a house to be a backlog, but there are certain people within that category of income who can actually afford to build their own houses, and therefore to just declare everybody within that income category as a homeless, it certificate is also problematic. So we need more data which is more reliable in order for us to estimate the demand and understand the demand for housing, so that we can have proper instruments to respond to varying levels of demand. The other issue was to accept informality as a reality and probably as a point of entry into the housing market. Stakeholders at the hearing suggested that about 60% of the people at the bottom of the market could access decent houses only through informal services, and government financing assistance could have some impact in reducing the backlog. Well, the other important issue is about the inefficiencies in the supply and access of well-located land and bulk infrastructure. And to a certain extent, this is also related to the issue that the chairperson spoke to about the rural housing, the rural housing development grant that the chairperson talked about. Currently, it takes about roughly 18 months before when a housing project is declared when maybe houses are being delivered to the actual recipients. In that process, what happens is when zoning starts, until the house is delivered to the recipient, of course there are such cost increase in the process, and as a result you end up with projects that are incompleted because cost has increased in the process, and therefore increases the inefficiencies, and that's why the stakeholders in the public hearing felt that we also need to reduce the inefficiencies in the housing delivery chain. Again, there was an issue about shifting away from the focus on ownership to all forms of housing supply. Instead of focusing narrowly on ownership, there's also a need to consider other forms of tenure and incentivizing them where possible, especially the rental market and the social housing units that the departments already do. I think another important factor that came out was the possible crowding out of the private sector, because some of the developers felt that because of the subsidies they create perverse incentives, and therefore they are unable to provide people who generally afford low priced houses at that level because of the expectation of assistance from government. As such, the private developers are sort of they're withdrawing from this market because they feel that it's overcrowded by the public finance. What I'm trying to say here is that there are certain developers who provide low cost housing, and therefore there's a bit of competition between them and the housing, the public housing system, because people who would ordinarily afford to buy low cost houses would sometimes wait, or would rather opt to get publicly financed housing instead of going to the market and purchase a house for themselves. So they feel that the public financing, housing finance system overcrowd. The issue that probably needs more discussion is that while the reallocation of funding between provinces is good for service delivery, it is the poor who suffers, and therefore there should be some plans to ensure that delivery and spending capacity is improved in underperforming provinces. One of the options would be obviously to reinvest negatively affected provinces in the future allocations. I think Sabela has already spoken to this. And just to indicate how expensive this backlog would be, if you suppose that at the current moment, the cost of providing an RDP house costs about 140 units, and supposing that there's about 1.2 million people who still need houses, it can cost up to about 300 billion rand. And this does not take into account the cost of providing infrastructure, of laying down infrastructure. So it's a lot of money. So therefore, assuming at the rate of 250,000 units per year, an annual budgetary implication would be around 35 billion. And even if you combine all the housing and infrastructure subsidies and maybe provide some of the state land, state-owned land, it will still be, there will still be a budgetary shortfall. And therefore, that's why we feel that the need for private providers to come into the housing market, so that to ease the pressure on the fiscal. And that's the point I was trying to make on crowding out. Because if you have the private sector, if you have the private sector providing some low cost housing, it therefore eases the pressure on the fiscal and reduces the backlog in return. SFC is also of the view that the housing units targets are not realistic, because of the point that Fabio has made, and therefore we feel that it's either the targets need to be revised downwards or more funding will be required to achieve them. But that also raises the question of fiscal affordability. I'll ask my to just summarize and conclude.
Okay. Maybe before I get to this summary, let me just say a few words on the rural household infrastructure grant. From the commission's perspective, there are obvious issues with that grant that need to be addressed. And I would like to take a view that agrees with the chairperson's point that the grant actually should not be taken away from the department. In fact, if we look at the number of years that the department has been administering the grant, it might be premature to actually solely on the basis of the non-performance of the grant to then say, let's move it elsewhere. It does not make sense. We think that the department, the National Treasury, and the Department of Cooperative Governance need to get together, and I think this committee would be the platform to basically address those particular issues. The concerns are with the design of the grant and the way in which, when the function was shifted, the grant was then moved to the department. There are issues which we think could be issues of readiness for the department to actually roll out the implementation. And that could easily have been part of the reason why the grant has performed so badly. There are other issues that relate to the rollout of the infrastructure on this sanitation, especially on the toilet side, that are linked to the revenues that municipalities have that need to be addressed. Because in terms of the grant framework, this grant does not deal with maintenance issues. And given the fact that there is no direct link between the equitable share, and here I want to take a position that says the municipalities that are targeted through this grant are rural municipalities, and therefore are municipalities that have got very little revenue-raising capacity. They depend entirely on the equitable share and other grants, but in particular for their operation and maintenance, they depend on the equitable share. There is nothing that automatically triggers an increase in the equitable share as you roll out new infrastructure for maintenance, because you will have to budget for maintenance and operations on your equitable from your equitable share. This grant is just for something else. And therefore, we need to take a view that says, first of all, is the department itself ready to implement this kind of a grant in the current form in which it is designed? And I think that is the responsibility of the department and the National Treasury and the Department of Cooperative Governance to an extent. The fact that the chairperson was referring to, that the grant will be taken away to COCT, is not necessarily to COCT, to DCOC, but it's the intention is to integrate it into the municipal infrastructure grant. That will confuse issues. Purpose is different. The target group of municipalities is also likely to be different. And so we should insist, I think, as this committee, on a thorough review of the grant design, and then we need to actually ensure that there is an across lines or across departments cooperation in terms of how this grant is actually implemented. Otherwise, it's not going to be a very useful thing to do. Simply to say, the idea was that these backlogs would be eliminated by such and such a period. So by such and such a period, we must reintegrate it into the municipal infrastructure grant. What happens to the maintenance budgets of those poor municipalities? Because you put infrastructure there, there's nothing that has happened to the money that they actually receive in the equitable. So that directly responds to the infrastructure that has been rolled out. And some of the problems that you've picked up in the media are as a result of those kinds of problems that have not been adequately addressed. I think in terms of the Commission's position, therefore, we would insist that a thorough assessment of the performance of this grant, including its design, should actually be undertaken, and this committee must actually oversee that process by the department. In fact, we would have insisted on an independent assessment as well before this grant, and that is entirely up to the committee to decide. But we would actually like to see an assessment before. And I think I must say that as a commission, we would not be very supportive of a decision that says let's take it back because it's not performing in that department. Anyway, to summarize the presentation, Chairperson, I think there is credibility in the department strategy and annual plans. I think the concern is around the targets that the department sets itself. I think it's very nice to set yourself very high standards, but if you consistently do not meet them, then it's probably not such a bad thing to take a step back and work downwards so that you don't present a picture that represents ambition in an environment where performance against set targets is actually a priority. I think it's important that some of these things actually have an impact on the audit outcomes for the department. Because once the Auditor General starts making an op- opinion around some of these issues and you're consistently having these kinds of things, it will have a negative impact. So it's important that that issue be reviewed. I think in terms of the issues around the public hearing that we held, it does seem that there needs to be a shift in the way in which the delivery of houses is actually done, or the financing or funding of housing delivery is actually done. And as has already been indicated, in August we will be presenting a set of options that can be looked at as we move forward to try and address some of the potential bottlenecks going forward, and maybe that will also speak to the issues of sustainability of the current model that we have. But I think there is a need to review that. So, Chairperson, that is where the presentation is.
No, thank you very much, Mr. Khumalo. I think the portfolio committee can interact, and Neville, you are part of the meeting, so I believe that we will. There are critical issues that we need to engage on, so that at least we may, when we take a resolution, we must also be aware of those issues, because I think there are critical issues where the committee has to take a firm stand on them. So we must not leave you behind. Honorable Bowman, Honorable Bula, Honorable Pets, and then Honorable Mkhalaba. Okay. Honorable Mnis, thank you.
First of all, thank you very much for the presentation. Some very interesting things have come out here. I think we always look forward to the presentation and the analysis of the FFC. But I think there are some things I want to, first of all, I think my concerns sort of started right at the beginning here, and it's tied up in slides later on, and that is the setting of the targets. I think we need to talk about that. The funding available for that. Now, I don't know whether you have seen the latest business plans of the department that were presented to us yesterday. And I think for the first time, we're actually beginning to see things coming together with units of money and broken down into a lot of this. But we as a committee, and as I speak for myself here, we've not had a chance to look carefully at that. We got the presentation yesterday morning. We've just got this one today. So, but I think it is of concern that the money, the funding, and the units and the capacity it's critical that that's all got to tie up. So the observations that you are making here, I think, are something that we have been concerned with over a number of years. So, which perhaps then leads me to this question about your public hearings. And your public hearings now, because you've made some interesting comments there. The people who came to that, I see it, you know, it was in conjunction with Ikurileni. Now, was it only within the Ikurileni municipality? Was it a little wider than that, Gauteng? I don't know who came to that thing. And then you mentioned things like, I'd like to know, were ordinary members of the public there? When I say that, people who are in receipt of the, say, the RDP house, for example. Now, when you make a comment like, you know, the people getting RDP houses up to the tune of 3,500 rand, and that perhaps we, you know, we're taking away from them the ability of them to produce their own house. I want to know in what context you're saying that. If that came out of the Was that just some half-flying people sitting in that hearing and saying these kind of things, or is it the people on the ground saying, look, we actually want to produce our own stuff, and, you know, so I'd like to know about that. Then the other thing that you were talking about, and that is the public finance that is being provided is preventing people from, and I think that is what you were trying to say there, preventing people from actually going into the market and purchasing a house. They're rather waiting to get some sort of a handout. Now, that also came out of the public hearing, so the same sort of principle applies. So if I could have some comment on that. I agree with you about poor data. I think that is something that we've been chasing, but again, I want to say the department has made huge strides here in what they presented to us yesterday. I think I have also the thing, the comment that you make about nurture. I want to ask you a question. Nurture yesterday in their presentation, as I understood it, had a huge deficit last year and are now planning to turn that around. In your opinion, with the research and the analysis that you've done, I mean, is that going to be possible? I know that we're talking about bad times, but, you know, I think their deficit was something like 37 billion, and then they're turning that around for a profit this year, in this coming year, of about, I think it was about 7 billion or something like that. So that's a huge turnaround that they, you know, they've got to make for towards that. I think, Chairperson, the sanitation thing I would like to get onto, but let me leave some, yeah, for now. If we can come back, because that's a whole thing on its own.
And I think that Honorable Bauman didn't leave anything. You know, Chair, if you look at the presentation, and my colleague is seated here, and I'm just going to leave these questions, because under every, there are questions. But I like the metaphor. You know, overspent, and whilst we took the money away from them. Because we're in a town. Makes it quite interesting. It's similar to say that we're running upstairs and downstairs with empty buckets full of water trying to provide basic services. Chair, we must look at the synchronization and the alignment here. I think it's of paramount importance. Whilst we cast an aspersion that the data might not be correctly captured, what are the negative impediments on your side that preclude you from correcting something that you want to say is not correct? I need to understand that. Because the department time and again had indicated that there were numerous impediments stagnating the processes of homes, the delivery of homes. And correct pieces of legislation and things were amended so that we could get our ducks in a row. Chair, fortunately, I had some time over the weekend doing some constituency work in the rural areas in KwaZulu-Natal. And, you know, I was quite pleased to see that you have, we in Itugweni municipality, has this Masakane outreach program trying to, you know, indicate to communities. And, Chair, I don't want to give you a tap on the back, but your name came out very profoundly at one human settlement, rural settlements, where you visited temporary homes and transit camps in your oversight visit to KwaZulu-Natal. Well, what I've heard that from 8 to 10 years, they are still there in temporary homes, as you correctly pointed out. When you speak about data analysis, and when you speak about reducing the capacity of building from 400 to 68,000, 220 to 68, you know, it dawns on my mind as what is happening with all these people that are living under very, very bad conditions. If we're going to come here and say that we have a target to build X amount of homes in one vein and contradict ourselves on the other, pointing fingers to other areas of incompetence, are we really going to build homes for those poor people? As indicated in the State of the Nation address, and you've made it very clear here as well at one point, I hear your argument, your sound financial, you know, concept of dealing with the delivery of houses with contractors, etc. But we cannot and must not deviate from the State of the Nation, what has been outlined. And the President has indicated that the poor must be given preference. I am saddened by the fact that the stagnated delivery does not give any positive impetus of your strategic plan. How are you going to rectify this? Whilst you might hide behind the issue of funding, insufficient funding, etc., there is a glaring weakness and contradiction in terms of data, funding, analysis. So we need to correlate all of this thing. We need to synchronize it, Chair. But, Chair, I think the Chairperson has said in his opening remarks that he has a team of experts. We want to believe that this team of experts will analyze all the challenges and try and put some measures into place that we could really start delivering homes for those people that are living in transit camps, informal settlements, and under bad conditions. But your point for the rural grant for non-performance, I don't think it carries water at this stage, any salt. Because the fact of the matter is, if you're saying that this grant must be moved, Chair, with no contradiction to what you are saying, because of non-performance, then it is my understanding that because you are not performing in various other aspects, this might just add to another impediment to move it to an area which is not performing, to add a non-performance squared. And I'm concerned about that. And the issue about the grant that you referred, I think when you speak about grant funding in terms of sustainability and municipalities for service, isn't the grant that is allocated to them a ring fence for a particular purpose? And therefore must actually work in terms of the grant funding that they achieve. Can you just expand that and more clarity on that? Chair, I want to leave it for there. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to agree with Member Bula. Both of them now have said a mouthful. But I think I'm going to give it my shot too, by starting off asking the big question, who designed this grant? That is my first question. Who designed it? Who were part of the whole process? Secondly, I absolutely agree with my colleagues when they say that it's an integrated effort when we want to deliver on housing. Integrated effort between all spheres of government, private sector, and all stakeholders to come up with a plan how we are going to deliver on housing in our country. I understand that the FFC had public hearings. It is, in fact, a pity that, but maybe we can get the reports of those public hearings. Because the next thing that I want to again emphasize is the database. Who is going to be responsible to ensure that the 2 million people that's been identified? I would also like to know how you come to that that amount of 2 million to be able to have a proper database of that. It is important that we know where, when, and I want to link it again onto the IDP process. Not only, Chairperson, the IDP process at local government level, who has all the data of their, who are under the breadline and who is in need of housing and who is in need of health care and who is in need of all the socioeconomic rights. There's also the spatial development framework of local government as well as the provinces, and then those are documents that can maybe assist, I would want to believe, to put a proper database in this country for once and for all, that we at least know what are we looking at. Are we looking at just the people that is that needs housing and can get RDP housing that is below the 3,500? And then I think the last point that I want to make is, when we talk about the municipal infrastructure grant, I do believe that this is a point of maybe a discussion that is needed, because the municipality is supposed to, through this grant, put the infrastructure, the roads and the the water, the electricity, the sewage, and all of that. They are responsible for that part. Then kick in the provincial and the national department with regard to the other funds, funding the 140. However, the identification of those people that need those houses, in fact, starts with the municipality. So I do believe, Chairperson, that maybe it is time that we go and look at who is going to do what around housing, who's actually going to deliver on housing, and who is going to be the planning part of housing, who's going to put and design policies and ensure that legislation is in place, and all of that, and what is national role going to be specifically, what is province's role going to be, what is local government's role going to be. Because I do believe that maybe the municipality might just have the capacity to be able to look at housing, and then obviously I'm sure design would have to be set up. But I think it is something that we can maybe consider to take a little bit further, Chairperson. I think I'll just, and then I also just lastly want to say, and I'm going to wait for my answer, who was responsible for the design of the grant, because from the FFC it sounds as if maybe it could have been National Treasury that designed this and just put it upon National Department and say, here's a design and you've got to use your funds within that framework. So let us get it here today. Let us not fool around with each other. Let us know where the crux of the problem lies, and then we can take it from there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me thank the FFC for the presentation. I think it gives us a food for thought. There are things that we need to definitely look at. And the way I see it, I think that it says that our housing policy is unsustainable, looking at the depletion of the fiscal resources. Because if you put targets but you can't match them with the capacity and the resources, then it's a futile exercise. So the bottom line is the housing policy is unsustainable. We got to rethink on how we do business. I have to agree that the Rural Household Infrastructure Grant, we should do a thorough review and assessment. Because if you recall yesterday, most of the rural provinces were crying foul in terms of the allocation of the USDG to say, why does it only go to the urban areas? So the only thing that they've got left is the Rural Household Infrastructure Grant, and we can't take it away from them. So we got to see how do we beef it up. And linked to that is the issue of sanitation. I know that you said we shouldn't be touching on it, but even in the mandate of the Rural Household Infrastructure Grant, we need to see
how can we use that grant to ensure that the backlog of sanitation is being addressed? So part of the review and the assessment should be to look at how can we use that grant to make sure that there is basic bulk infrastructure, more importantly, sanitation. So we can't take away this grant. It should remain with us, but we should be able to implement it better because we only spent 20% of this grant in the last financial year. And I didn't get any explanation from the provinces. Why did they not spend this amount? So that is why National Treasury would think that maybe it's not viable to be in housing. Let's take it somewhere else. But I would disagree with that one. Let's see how can we capacitate it and make sure that how human settlements spend this one. I also have to agree on the issue of targets not being reached. I always say we should focus or refocus from being counting of how many houses we've built rather than focusing on the impact and the quality of those houses that we are building. So clearly we are putting targets that we are not reaching, but on a yearly basis we increase that target. So I don't know why do we continue to do that. And I think when one looks at the issue of underspending of the other provinces and reallocation of those funds, yes, I agree. What we need to do there, maybe we need to look at the capacity of those provinces. To see how can we beef it up so that they can spend these funds. But, you know, logic says if you don't spend it, that means you don't need it. So let's take it somewhere where they need it. So it's one of those things that we got to have a look at very much concisely. When you were talking about the recommendations for 2012-2013, you were saying government should conduct a broad-based review of the efficacy of the current housing finance arrangement. I think you should also talk about the basic service infrastructure because of, like I say, we cannot only focus on the end result, but we should start on the basic. And there is a big backlog when it comes to basic services. And one of those is sanitation. So rather than us focusing on the top-up structure and the end product, let us focus on what are we doing to make sure that the development is holistic from getting the basics right. Then it's quite sad that we don't have the data. Well, we always knew that the data that we have is a very inaccurate, some such type of data. So, yes, data is one of those things that is of concern to us. We don't have that. But one thing that is interesting is that, and I would want to tweak it with the way Honorable Bowman asked it about the self-help initiative of people. Honorable Bowman says that maybe some people from the high saying that no, these people who are earning less than 3.5 can build the houses themselves. But this is what we need to be focusing on. Self-help mechanisms and reliability. I mean, we cannot put around the push about this one. It is unsustainable. Our fiscal is unsustainable. You've got 5 million taxpayers. You've got 15 million who are on the social grant system. You've got 49 million population. So it's unsustainable. But if people are coming from the ground and saying, we are prepared to do self-help, we got to encourage that one. This dependency syndrome at some point should come to an end. We cannot sustain it. Yes, it takes a bold political move to say that because of it's got political implications. But we got to move on that one and say, how do we make people say, we want to do self-help, we want to assist government, we want to make sure that we, you know, can be in a position to also do our own thing. So I think, and again, the issue of say, of looking at alternative forms of tenure and incentivization, I think we got to encourage that one. It goes hand in hand with self-help because of once you give people those options, then they can maneuver around. And yes, I think you're quite right when you come into the issue of entitlement. We are at that level where people are saying entitled. I've looked at the one service delivery protest, and one community leader came out and said, we need a house, we need water, we need electricity, we need sanitation, so it's a question of we need all those things, a whole package. There's no responsibility from my side. government said they will do this for us. We need it. And you can see that those are people who can at least try and put something on the table, but they say no. Government said they will provide us. We must get that one. So we got to think of this one very carefully when we come to making some of these decisions moving forward. And yes, it's quite very sad that we put in targets and we are not reaching those targets. And we are not thinking out of the box, how can we deal with this issue of us not reaching the target. So we got to rethink because of the targets, I agree, they are unrealistic. The fiscal is depleting, and we got to think innovatively on how do we move away from this dependency and entitlement syndrome. Thanks, Chair. I will park it there.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think my colleagues have said enough. I will only add there and there. Chair, we cannot deny that demand for housing in South Africa remains very, very high. I think there is a need to look at other housing delivery options like rental housing market, because the provinces has a problem in delivering. There are shortfalls in their targets. I'm not sure what might be the cause, because most of them have never indicated any capacity challenge. A number of housing units delivered decrease even when allocations are increasing rapidly. Really, it shows that there is a big wrong somewhere that needs to be corrected. On page 7, in the private entities chair, in the NHBRC, there is home enrollment that is 409082. I think this is not the exact number, because we need to check how many were of good quality and how many needs rectification. I think it's high time now that we should know the exact numbers of houses that need rectification. Because backlogs remain level. There is a statement that the backlog remains at the level similar to those in 1994. This is really disturbing, Chair. Because, like, we are making a drop in the ocean. I'm not sure what might be the cause and what can we recommend in this one. And the last one of the poor data. I think this one needs to be attended to. If there are any policy gaps, we should have to attend it. Because this will make us provide free houses forever, even to the people who can afford. I think we have to attend to this one. Thank you very much, Chair.
Mine is if maybe we can elaborate more on slide 8 for me, because this reallocation and all that, because when you check now, you are saying now 91%, 91.8% for Eastern Cape, whereas you know that there are some problems there. If you can elaborate more, if you do have a chance, and then you go a little bit down, if you say Eastern Cape, and then you identify the areas. Well, when we do our oversight, we can check them. Now, when I say, for instance, in Northern Cape, they overspent by 103. So from what? Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. I think Kumalo, if you can unpack this overcrowding, this claim by the private sector that there is an overcrowding of the market,
by government. Because I feel very, that statement, I don't think it's proper. Because, I mean, from the side of the private sector, not from the side of FSC. I don't think it is proper. When they are saying they do have, they provide low-cost housing, what type of a low-cost housing process or mechanism do they provide to these poor people? If you look at the background or the history of our people, as we agree the partnership between government and private sector in ensuring that there is a provision of housing houses to the people of South Africa. But if they can claim that they are the only ones who are supposed to provide, we cannot let the market to provide, only the market cannot depend on the market to provide essential services to the communities, to the nation. So I just want us to unpack that so that we have a good understanding, so that when we respond to it, we respond it appropriately. I think that one it needs a very magic. And then the other one, it's interesting that these provinces have overspent. it's very much interesting. I think we need to get that. Even the department can also assist that. Because this is an issue that as the people who are playing oversight, we must be able to talk to it. What does it mean? The money has been taken away from you, but you are fined overspending. We understand those provinces that have that they overspend because they were the recipients of those grants that have been transferred because of the possibilities you are about to perform at the other provinces. We need to talk to that one. And then the issue of shifting away from the ownership, I would not agree fully, but at the same time, we need to balance. We cannot shift away because the ownership, that is the one issue that we need to promote. The ownership does not necessarily mean that you get a state subsidy house. That is not the ownership that we are promoting. We have to promote. We have to promote the ownership of everybody must have a house as an asset. You are working, buy a house. You are working, you don't have money, the state assists you with that guarantee fund to get a house. So when we reflect to these things and when we talk to the communities, it must be clear. We must pronounce a clear message to them. What are we saying? The one now is confusing. It's not that it's FFC only. Even the SHRA, you could see that there were emphasis. There was an emphasis on this one. No, we don't agree. We fully agree that there has to be a promotion of render. At the same time, we look at that rental itself. We need a comprehensive policy. That's why FFC has to come up and assist us and the department. We need to have a comprehensive policy framework that speaks to the rental itself, because the rental has got the elements of abusive elements. So even Yona, it's not perfect.
So that is why I'm saying we need to talk to those issues. And then the other issue, this self-help, it's very crucial that you assist us to come up with your research. This self-help, it has to be promoted. Government has got a policy of PHP. And that policy, you'll find that people, they don't like it. Even the provinces, they don't like it, this PHP. They are saying it takes a long time to what to do what. But if we are serious, other countries, if other countries can manage to do it, why South Africa cannot do it? Why? Because in other countries, this concept works very well. So it means we still have all of us, private sector, all of us, public, government, and so on, all stakeholders in South Africa, we need to ensure that when we talk, the one thing we say here to political parties, as in the media, we attack each other rather than, I'm not saying it's opposition, I'm saying political parties. We don't talk to issues. We talk to each other. That is important. We need to talk. Not say, ANC has not done this, DA has not done this, COPE has not done this. So it is, they have to do something. I'm just making an example. It's a living example. When we get to the media, let's talk to issues. So that the constituency that we are leading should understand. Now, we said, no, all the parties will say, the ANC has not done this, has promised the people. And then you continue to promise the people yourself something that you're not going to do. Time has come to stop that. What we need to do, let's say, one time, we need to have a debate as this committee. Debate issues, and then we invite the community. We used to have those masters of laws here, and then we debate. What do we mean when we talk to self help? And then we encourage people. So I think with your assistance, I'm giving you a task. It's unfortunate that we are here today. We are going to get out loaded. I'm just giving you a whole day level with your team. I'm giving them a task because we are discussing issues that are raised by them. So they must come up with solutions and propose solutions to these issues. Then the other issue, I think the members have raised critically. The issue of decreasing numbers, you know, as much as I would agree that there has to be a decreased number of targets, but we can't use it in a pressure in yoga, in budget, see if money start a spec backward. The reason for me to say that, we used to have, the department used to present an amount of 500,000 units to be produced. And the department were fought strongly with the department when the president announced this 400,000. As the committee, we fought with them because we were saying, you are taking an advantage of the president's announcement. The president has never said that 400 is a minimum. Yes, never. And he just said, I mean, it's a maximum, I'm sorry. He has never said that it's a maximum delivery. The president set minimum standards. Yeah, what? The president sets minimum standards. So it's up to the capacity of the department based on resources, based on human. Finance and human resources. Do they have that capacity to achieve the minimum standards. That change, eh? Do they have the capacity in Temkhalapa to achieve the minimum standards set by the president in his State of the Nation address? That's what we have to talk about. Rather, stick to minimum standards and then improve from those minimum standards. And then by increasing, because abantu bayazalwa, nanamhlanje umzalo abantwana in 10 years' time or 18 years' time, those children will need houses. So the issue of the backlog, it should not be an issue. But we need to get the figures so that when we work on something. Sinai Foundation, we do have a foundation to work on. But if backlog is not going to be there, it will be there forever. Because it will be there forever. Because abantu bayazala. Abantu bane housing needs, xa sebenzele bakhula basuka ku 18 years, it will have housing needs. So let's not politicize this thing. We have to be sincere when we deal with this. Well, governing the government, 2.0. No, so I agree. We will never come to an end. So I'm trying to say, let's address those issues. So it means we have to stick to page 4. The department must assist us to explain why in the third quarter, they've built only 88,000. So it means they are not going to achieve. They are, the number of houses. This is the one, yes. So it means they are not going to achieve the report, when they are presenting their annual report, in September, it means it will reflect a shortfall from the target that was set for 2011-12. So those are the issues that they have to be considered. So I think I can hand over to the chairperson as well as the department to make an input. Otherwise, this is a genuine discussion. We are not playing other people down. It's a constructive discussion that is going to assist us all going forward. Chairperson?
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you, Honorable Members, for the comments that have been made. I think they really speak to the core issues that we think needs to be discussed and solutions basically found for them. Let me just say that there's one comment that I did not actually understand or the question from Honorable Bula there. I just could not pick up your comments properly on the grant. I thought you said you don't agree with the. I'm not sure whether you don't agree with me or you don't agree with the National Treasury in terms of the intention to fold the grant into the municipal infrastructure grant. I'm not sure if you could just.
Yeah. No, basically what I'm saying is that whilst you indicate that you don't agree with the movement of the grant. Right. What I'm concerned about is you want the grant to be integrated, and you want to move the grant from where it is, let's say, to another admin part. Is that not correct?
What I want is for...
We are in line.
Yeah, okay.
We are in line.
No, with regards to Honorable Bowman's comments, let me say that the public hearings were actually not limited to Ekurhuleni or Gauteng. They were actually open to the whole country. So there were stakeholders from all over the country. They were also open to civil society. They were open to financial institutions like banks. In fact, I think the banks basically made their own submission around that. So there was a whole spectrum of stakeholders from all over the country as well in terms of that process. I think the question that you have on related to the stakeholders is who is pushing the view that ordinary people can actually build their own houses. I would leave that to the technical team to actually speak to, but just what we have so far presented in terms of the public hearings are the views of the submissions or taken from the submissions that were made and consolidated into a report. And in that regard, I must say that the report, we actually submitted it to Parliament, because in terms of the FFC Act, we must actually report on any of these kinds of tasks that we undertake to Parliament. So the report is... it was submitted to Parliament. If the members did not receive it yet, I will ask Henry to make sure that copies are actually distributed to the members. Some of the questions that have been raised in that regard, the answers are actually in that report. So it would have been we probably made an assumption that members had actually seen the report, and With this discussion, some of the questions would not arise in the manner in which they have arisen. But I think they are comments, and I would like to take those as comments, because we do not want to preempt the outcome of the actual research process by making pronouncements on we don't agree with this or we agree with that. These are views that require a scientific analysis, so that we can actually be able to come up with real solutions that can actually take us forward. The other question that was asked by Honorable Pula relates to the overspending against reallocations. Again, I think the researchers will provide a response to that. And then you ask a question that says, what is it that we propose should be done to correct the current impediments in housing delivery? That's a very difficult question to answer, because as is very clear here, housing delivery is not just about the house. It's about the infrastructure, as has been highlighted there by the Honorable Member in his comments. It's about everything that is, it's about the amenities, it's about the neighborhood, it's about everything. And so if we then look across what is happening in all of those areas, then probably we don't only solve issues relating to housing, but solve issues relating to all of those interconnected areas. And what I was talking about, saying that it is important that the department does at some point get to the departments that are responsible for this, because I'll put them like that, to actually make sure that the pr- problems that are being identified here are actually highlighted to all, and everybody knows what this committee is grappling with and where the committee requires answers. I did have a discussion earlier with the chairperson in her office, and we spoke about how government works and the new delivery model of government. I mean, there are service delivery agreements between the minister and the president, and that those should cascade downwards and be reflected, hopefully, in performance contracts of people. If that has not actually happened, then there's a disjunction, because what you expect at a political level is not actually what is practiced at an operational level. And so we need to actually get to those kinds of questions as well. How are these service delivery agreements reflected in the performance? Because the performance management system of government has been there. It preceded the change in the service delivery model of government. So there are issues that need to be, in order that you address those issues of working in silos. Because the question that was asked here says, who designed, and you were very empathic, Honorable Duncan, who designed the grant? The department is here. But what I must tell you now is that when we were discussing the division of revenue bill, we had the National Treasury and the Financial and Fiscal Commission in the portfolio standing committee on appropriations. And the issue was raised about the design of conditional grants and whether some of the grants are not performing because of the design. And the question was, who designs these grants? From our perspective, as the Commission, National Treasury is responsible, the Minister of Finance is responsible for everything that is in Chapter 13 of the Constitution, including setting the norms and standards for what these grants must look like. The departments, on the other hand, motivate for the grants. And when they motivate for the grants, there is a framework that they must actually present that says, this is the nature of the grant, and this is how it must it's going to work. And National Treasury must then be satisfied that it's consistent with the norms and standards that we expect for these types of grants. So it's a joint exercise. National Treasury is involved. The department is involved. In this particular grant that we are talking about, this was a grant that was moved from the one department to the other to deal with the function that had shifted. Now, to that extent, I am sure that the department is here. They will be able to explain what their input was. As I indicated, I am not sure, I'm not convinced that the department, in terms of readiness, could actually be judged in terms of how much money has been spent over the period that this grant has been with the department. So it is not... It is not being fair to the department to say you did not spend, so we are actually taking this grant away from you and we're putting it elsewhere. And that is why I think it is important that we first of all do or conduct a proper assessment of the grant itself and whether, in terms of the department's own objectives, because What is in the framework, in that grant framework, is not cast in stone. The department might have different views in terms of what must actually happen with the experience that they have. So those are issues that need to be looked at. So there's nothing that is cast in stone. So these things are actually done on an annual basis. The Division of Revenue bill is passed on an annual basis, and any reviews of these things must actually happen, and I think this is one of those areas that needs to be looked at. I'm just being selective here. The issue of the reallocation of as a concept that is contained in the Division of Revenue Act, it is really about ensuring that money that has been allocated for a certain purpose is actually spent. It's not returned because there's an opportunity cost that is incurred. If you don't actually spend the money, it could have been used elsewhere. That is the main reason for reallocation. But in terms of the principle, a reallocation does not mean that you have actually lost that money, because we work on a three-year cycle. Now, if it's reallocated, it's reallocated. But now the responsibility that, because this is where we think that national departments, when it comes to this conditional grant and their spending, need to take responsibility. Because we must ask a question, why is it that that province is not spending? Because this money belongs to the national department. It's for national policy priorities. So the national department has a responsibility to ensure that there is adequate capacity. In 2006, I think 2007, the commission made a recommendation that all conditional grants, a certain percentage will be dedicated to ensure that there is capacity to actually implement whatever the program is. Now, we have to ask the hard questions from departments, national departments, where these kinds of reallocations are actually occurring. What is it that they have done to ensure that those reallocations do not happen? That is my simple answer to that question. The issues around the dependency, I can't agree with you more, because at the end of the day, to link with what the chairperson said about assets, you see, it's different when you give somebody something and say, yes, it's tech, it's now yours. From when you say, let's work on this together and it will be yours. It's two different things. You know, this is an anecdote. I met, I think it's about 2-3 years ago, with the former mayor of Ekurhuleni, I think it was Nkosi. We had a discussion about these issues around housing and how do we deal with this problem. One of the stories that he told was a story of what he referred to as an industry that is actually developing in the housing market. You see, we formalized informal settlements. We built RDP houses. We put people there. Somebody has created an industry of creating, ensuring that informal settlements always mushroom. And there's a battle of slumlords, basically, that it's a market on its own. And so this issue of this is a house that we've given you becomes a tool to actually, for somebody to actually get into. And that is not the intention of the policy. So that is why we think that we need to actually review how we deal with it in that sense. And I am hoping that the team of people that we put together to look at these options will be able to come up with the solutions to this problem. That is actually reality. It's an anecdote, but I think it is fair to assume that it's not only in Ekurhuleni that kind of a thing is actually happening. It's probably more widespread than that. We will go back to the allocation slide, I think, let me talk to the issue of targets. I'll come back to that. Let me talk to the issue of target setting. Honorable Chair, you mentioned the fact that the President set a minimum standard and said this is it. And from where I sit, and I'm sure that this gentleman from the Commission and also the gentleman from the department at the back, I am sure that we are all aware that the president does not simply dream up a number. He comes up with the State of the Nation address on the basis of the information that has been provided to him about what is possible and what is not. And so what is affordable and what is not. And so it is important that these kinds of numbers are looked at in that particular context. Our concern with the targets that are set by the department is simply that if you consistently perform at the level at which you are performing against your targets, it is pointless. There could be a reason why, and as Sabelo's presentation indicated, is it because the targets are too high, or is it because there are funding problems? By the way, the growth in the budget should not necessarily be translating into the growth in the numbers of houses that are being constructed. I don't think that there's a linear relationship. It could easily be driven by inflation, and we need to also understand where we are coming from. The 2010 boom in the construction sector also had its own negative impacts on what could be done or what could be built in terms of the inflationary pressures because of the demand for construction materials at that particular point. So those are issues that we need to take into consideration. But the issue really is about whether or not, because part of the reason for setting targets is that they must actually be achievable. They must be achievable. So we might actually aspire to build 400,000 houses. And if we see that we are not actually getting there, we must identify what are the problems, why are we not getting there. So if we know that it's because the budget is small, then we know where to put the debate, and then we know that in terms of the budget that we have, realistically, this is what we expect to deliver. Because otherwise, it's pointless to set the targets if you are consistently not going to meet it. It's very nice to aspire to something, but on an annual basis, where your performance is measured against the target that you yourself set, it does present a picture that is not. I agree with you, Madam Chair, that we cannot simply rely on the market to solve the problem. But maybe we should not also discount it as a player in the process. And so that brings you to the issue of what the private sector is saying. Your question about unpacking what the private sector means around the overcrowding of the market by government. It's really linked to that particular issue. I will ask Mr. Rakabe here to speak a bit about that. Let me stop here and ask Sabelo, can you please get into the details of the issues around the allocations and those numbers, and then
Okay, thank you. I think the questions around allocation and reallocation are emanating from this light. And what I would highlight here is that there's two provinces that where funds were taken away from. That is the KZN as well as the Free State provinces. And then that affected their overall adjusted spending at the end of that financial year. I would highlight here to say KZN, after some money was taken away from them in anticipation that they were likely to underspend at the end of the financial year. And then as a result, I may say probably what was taken from them was more than what should have been taken from them, because they ended up with about 2.9%, close to 3% overspending as a result of that. But again, if you look at it, it's about 3% of overspending is below that 5%, which is a benchmark which is used. I don't think it's a very big deal, but it's just to what we did here, we put this for that to highlight. But if that funding was not taken away from them, they would have underspent. But here we can take it positively to say the money that was taken from them was used productively to deliver services, housing, elsewhere in the country. Yeah. What you can highlight here from the Free State, after that money was taken, they achieved 100% allocation, spending, which means should that money, if it was not taken away from them, they were going to underspend. And then now it was used productively elsewhere to provide housing delivery in the country. So it's not a loss.
Okay, the issue of overcrowding, as the chairperson has said, it's one of those issues that were raised by the private developers. And I think as the committee and the FSC, we should not take it in absolute terms, because the question that probably we're going to ask in the follow-up studies that we're going to be doing is whether the private sector can actually provide houses that cost at least below or around 150,000, and whether there is a market for that kind of houses. Just anecdotally, yesterday I was speaking to a lady who is selling hot dogs at some garage, and she was saying that she wants to buy an RDP house. But I said, it's actually illegal to buy an RDP house. Did you know that? But she went on and on. But I asked her whether she would be prepared to buy her own house that cost about 100,000. She actually said yes, she's got some savings in the bank account. If there was a house that cost about 100 rand, she would be happy to pay 1,000 rand or two, if it means that she's going to have a house for herself. So there are all these anecdotes that are coming. So it's one of the things that we will probably be looking at in the technical studies that we're going to be doing. Thanks.
What is important is there a house for 100,000? There's no house. So they cannot. My point of departure is from the private sector. When they say they are providing low cost, they can provide low cost. So it means we need to have a debate with them. They must tell us what kind of a house they can, low cost house, how much. When they refer to a low cost house, how much is that? So let's flag it as a discussion. Never.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chair, I think the department has indicated we did participate in the hearings, and we've indicated that we're available to discuss the contents of the report and some of the recommendations and discussion points. And we've indicated that we'll take it into consideration in the review of the policy, the legislation, the programs, as well as the project funding, planning, and implementation. Just a couple of points to note. I think the department, in conjunction with the presidency, as approved by cabinet, is undertaking 5 evaluations. And those 5 evaluations cover just the impact in relation to the policy, the funding. So are we as government achieving what we want to achieve? So we're undertaking, and that includes the subsidy, It includes the Urban Settlements Development Grant because it's ongoing impact evaluation to find out whether or not we're doing what we should. And it covers two programs, including the Integrated Residential Development Program. I mean, those evaluations will commence, I think, probably at the end of this month. They'll start, and it's been done. It's approved by Cabinet, so it will give us. In relation to those evaluations, Chair, we've indicated, and depending on a whole range of issues, those will inform what we've requested for is a review of the subsidy as well as the grant architecture. So to deal with these issues in a specific, concerted, rational way on the basis of credible research data as well. Because I think one of the problems that we must be what we all think particularly as government is that there's a lot of anecdotal and there's a lot of dinner table discussions that take place, which then translates into real or perceived real perceptions, which is not correct. And I think it's sometimes very dangerous, and particularly in the subsidized human settlements market. You know, so the issues around what does it cost for a house, what does it cost in relation to the servicing, what does it cost in relation to what the private sector is wanting to achieve. So that's what we want to be able to achieve. In relation to the delivery statistics, Chair, we've at various points together with the portfolio, together with the minister in reports that we've put to the minister, we've raised the issue about the decline in the delivery statistics vis-a-vis the targets that have been set. So I think the one point we need to be clear is that given where this grant sits in terms of the schedule, we rely on the provinces and we make that up. So, you know, it's this bottom-up approach coming from the IDPs of the municipalities, your provincial growth strategy, and that's what we rely on. But I think of importance over the last 3 years has been the fact that we've moved from housing to human settlements. And conceptually, in terms of the grant framework, in terms of the subsidy framework, we've not moved. So as we indicated yesterday, there's a substantial amount of money that gets utilized in land, in bulk infrastructure, in greening, and a whole range of ancillary developmental issues that impact on the human settlements concept. So one of the things we must be careful of is taking the subsidy amount of 15 billion, dividing it by 87,000, and saying that's the figure that we want to achieve. It doesn't. In the last financial year, in the 2011-2012, one of the things we've raised is that we must be careful because the Urban Settlements Development Grant figures must be added. You know, so that because there's a percentage of that amount that has gone to the Urban Settlements Development Grant, and we must add those figures, you know, to say whether or not that achieved. What we've indicated is that given where the FSC is, given where Treasury is, given where government is as a whole, In reviewing the programs, we must take into cognizance the developmental impact and the outcomes. So when we talk about issues around state, it's not only about state, but it's also about commercial capacity. And we must unpack this issue about capacity, because what is capacity? You know, it means different things to different people. Does it mean a planner? Does it mean an ability? It's a wide range of things. But also, you know, this whole issue about the private sector is going to rescue us, or the private sector is the panacea to all our developmental ills. I think we should be very careful of that. Yes, they have a role to play. But when we talk about some of the developmental outcomes that we want to achieve, so for example, in trying to promote a cooperative delivery model, or enhancing it, or improving it, or entrenching it, so that we move away from dependence to developmental, we must be also clear that it takes time, you know, building capacity, because in the last 18 years, community capacity, NGO capacity, CBO capacity has been depleted. And we've got to now rebuild that. And I think we must be all mature about it. And we also, there's going to be this tension between, well, if you want to fast-track delivery, do we go commercial? If you want to improve the quality of delivery and its income and its outcomes, then it's got to be community-based. And that foundation, we've got to invest in that foundation in terms of capacity, technical support, and human resources. So it's not always going to be that. Just a couple of points in relation to I think the one issue that we did raise is that I think we must be very careful to say that, and some of the presentations that were made at the FFC paints this picture of doom and gloom. And it's not doom and gloom. You can always say, when we go home at night, or you go home tonight or this afternoon, we switch on the power, the lights come on. You open the tap, water comes, you can drink it. There's not many countries that you can say that you can drink the water from the tap. So I think we must be very careful. So even some of the research that the FFC consultants have done in conjunction with the department shows that we have improved the stabilization and we've created the stability in the property and market. It shows that asset creation amongst the poor to a measure has you know, there's certain positive outcomes. It hasn't achieved everything, but there has been. The one thing that we haven't been able to achieve has been the crowding in of the private sector. And that's an issue that I don't think as a department we'll be able to solve. It's a societal problem. It's a fundamental government problem. Just the last point, Chair. I mean, the one issue that and we'll take it up with the FFC and I think the committee is aware, is that in relation to the performances of the entities, we've indicated that as the department, we're not particularly happy with the performances of the entities and the provinces in terms of delivery. And that's because of the inherited legacy and convention that the national department is this post office. And you and the minister have indicated that, Chair. We're not supposed to be post offices, but we've created this mentality that we're post offices and we don't hold people accountable for their achievements. Now, that's the one issue about the delivery targets. The delivery targets is, we've been very clear that if we don't push provinces, particularly around informal settlement households, then I think it's not acceptable for us as a department or politically or at a senior administrative level for us to say we'll give what the provinces give to us in terms of a figure, because then this disconnect between what the backlog is and what the aspirations of our community is and what governments put in relation to resources and getting value for money, that disconnect is not there. So those are just some of the issues. And I think what happened over the last 6 or 7 months between ourselves and what the work at the FSC, it creates a very good grounding for us to sort of perhaps maybe September, October, present both to yourselves and other committees a really good, well thought out document, and you know, in the scheme of things, I think it's a very opportune time between June and that period. Thanks, Chair.
No, it's fine. I think we are in agreement that this report is a very, very good foundation, and it's opening a window for discussion, because whoever see who clear, if we look at their presentation, they are saying some of the issues that have been raised in the public hearing, they would need a proper analysis. So it means it's a work in progress. But it's good that we start now, so that when that time arrives, we know that we have already started. I want us to see all of us, so that when that time arrives, we are able to come up with appropriate solutions that are going to assist the department. But I want to check now from Neville. Neville, there is this proposal that we will put forward to say, as the portfolio committee, together with yourself, we need to ensure that during this period, this two-year period, let's find a way to talk about this rate. I think we are all in agreement on that one. So that is why I'm saying you have to prepare something together with Mr. Kumar, so that is going to assist us. Because we need to have a meeting with the National Treasury. We are the portfolio committee. We have got a mandate, constitutional mandate, to stand and support whatever we believe that it could assist in the delivery of human settlement, sustainable human settlement. So I believe that we're all in agreement that we need to have to encourage that there has to be this independent assessment. This program, it must not be this grant, this period, this grant has been within human settlements. It must start, the grant was somewhere. What was the impact of the grant when it was somewhere? Because we do have our own experiences as public representatives. We have been to these areas. We have found that in some other areas, it has not assisted. So we need to say, let's have this assessment from where it was and from where it is currently, and what are the gaps, SS of Bonafiguzo, within the human settlements sector. And then we take it forward. And then our motivation, it will be accompanied by not saying what the National Treasury has decided, we are not supporting it. So that we discuss these issues, we take them to the Finance and Appropriations Committee. During the BRRR period, I'm giving you now a time frame, when we are presenting BRRR, this matter has to come to the agenda. Thank you very much. Honorable members, we can get the next presentation. I don't think this one is going to take much of our time. You are welcome, Mrs. Okay. We do have our representatives from the UWC. UWC Community Law Center. And by 12:45, we will be finished so that we go for lunch. And then we prepare ourselves, honorable members, for the cluster, social cluster. So, must you set a comfort break for 5 minutes by the time it has set?
Can we come resume our session? And the honorable members, order. Why the Nana has on the Lelani? No. Why does this say? You can see. Honorable members, let's take the opportunity to welcome the Law Society from UWC. There's a lady who's going to make an introduction. And when you, before you came to the meeting, we indicated that it is important for the public or the stakeholders to be given an opportunity to raise issues around the human settlements development if they feel that to do so. And I indicated that you are one of the stakeholders that demonstrated interest to raise issues on housing. But I said, no, you better come to the platform, which is a good platform, which is the portfolio committee. So the floor is yours, but unfortunately time is limited. At 12:45, we have to leave this room because we are having another session at 2 p.m., which is going to be presented by the National Development, by the Planning Commission. So your time is limited. I know how human settlement issues are very, very broad, but this is not the first and the last time. We will still, if you wish to do so, will indicate to my office, then we can come and proceed with the issues. It's not a master challenge. Yeah, we cannot finish these issues. I thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to present. My name is Gladys Mukundi from the Community Law Center, and my colleague is Dr. Combrick from the Center for Disability Law and Policy from University of the Western Cape. Our presentation today focuses on special needs housing, a comment on the Department of Human Settlements Strategic Plan of 2012. The presentation is going to start with a brief overview of who we are. That is the Community Law Center and the Center for Disability Law and Policy. The brief overview is on special needs housing and the current problem. In our recommendations, we will give two kinds of recommendations, one to the Department of Human Settlements and to the committee. So this we'll make this presentation jointly. I'll do the first part and my colleague will go to the second part. Briefly, the Community Law Center is a human rights institute that focuses on research, education, and advocacy. We have various projects, and the projects that are currently dealing with this issue on housing is the Socioeconomic Rights Project, the Children's Rights Project, and the Parliamentary Program. We have been involved in research on housing previously, focusing on women who have access to housing for women who have faced gender-based violence. Then we have published a report on the same. The Center for Disability Law and Policy was established at the University of the Western Cape in 2009. It's an institute focusing on disability law and policy, mainly on research, education, and training. Its work is based on the Convention on Rights of Persons with Disabilities, specifically on Article 19 and Article 9 on the right to independent living and accessibility. So focusing on the issue of special needs housing, a brief definition of what is special needs housing. It is housing which provides for a range of people in special need. In other words, people who are beneficiaries of special needs subsidies. These are, we've listed a few. For instance, orphans and vulnerable children, people affected or infected by HIV and AIDS, elderly persons, including frail care, persons with disability. This covers physical, intellectual, as well as psychosocial, victims of domestic abuse and family violence, as well as the homeless and those living on the streets, such as street children, refugees, and trafficked people. Special needs housing includes a range of housing options. The groups that I've just mentioned are eligible to a range of housing options, such as emergency shelter, transitional housing, that is second stage housing for women who have experienced gender-based violence, as well as specialized health care. This covers frail care for elderly persons and community group homes for persons with disabilities. Special needs housing has previously been, has mostly been provided at the provincial level, mainly in KwaZulu-Natal since 2001, in Gauteng, and in Eastern Cape. The practice has been that the provincial Department of Human Settlements adapts existing housing delivery mechanisms to approve projects. Typically, non-governmental organization or civil society organization apply for capital funding from the provincial Department of Human Settlements for acquisition of new buildings or renovations. They then have their projects assessed for viability if the NPO has skills and capacity to operate and maintain the shelter, and if they can have a sustainable project. By sustainable project, we mean in terms of operational cost of the project. We have evidence of an NPO that has reported on such work from grassroots organizations, the PPT Trust, and if you'd like documentation on the same, we'd be glad to provide. So now focusing on the main problem, or what is the problem, rather. Despite this provision by the Provincial Department of Human Settlements, there is a problem in that organizations providing for special needs housing services at grassroots level do not receive adequate support from Provincial Department of Human Settlements or local government. This is because national housing codes do not provide for special needs housing policy. As such, we are proposing we're saying that there is need for an enabling environment to assist address these needs for special groups. And for the second part of the presentation, I'll let my colleague continue. I'm trying to rush because of time.
Thank you, Gladys. I think that one of the main difficulties that come out in the policy environment until now is the fact that there is no main policy in the national, as it's still known, housing code on special needs housing. And that gives us a number of practical problems. And one of the main practical problems is that special needs housing becomes invisible in the national planning environment. And we thought that it might be useful to look at the recent strategic plan to just see whether this is in fact still the case. So we thought it might be useful to look at the recent 2012 strategic plan. And I have to say that we're at a little bit of a disadvantage because I think it would have been much more useful both to us and to the committee to be able to look at the more specific program plans that were presented to you yesterday. And needless to say, we will still do that. We looked at the strategic plan, this one. This very comprehensive one that was presented to the committee in March. And I have to say that we found that there were some very encouraging elements in the plan and its presentation. My cell phone keeps doing funny things. And especially the fact that it was stated that special and designated group and sector focus programs were to be enhanced. And also the fact that even though the next year is going to be a transitional year, that this would not be an excuse for failure to deliver. So I have to just start off by saying that we found much that was encouraging in the plan, but we were also quite worried about the fact that the plan was very broad and that it was quite hard for us to find a foothold in the plan around special needs housing. And again, I have to qualify that by saying that we do understand that the more detailed program plans were still to follow. Looking at the six plans or the six programs that were presented or included in the plan, we thought that there were three that might specifically be relevant to special needs housing delivery. Now, bearing in mind that special needs housing delivery or the aspects of special needs housing delivery span a broad range of issues. So we then started looking at where special needs housing delivery and the development of a national policy directive that could actually give guidance to provinces on special needs housing policy programming, where that could fit in. So if we look at Program 2, which is Human Settlement Delivery Frameworks, there are basically three main frameworks there: the operational framework, the governance framework, and advisory services. Under operational framework, we see here that the objectives are to provide a macro policy framework, develop a policy, provide a policy development framework, developing a national policy directive on special needs housing would fit in squarely here. Program 3, Human Settlement Strategy and Planning. There are three components here, and each of these components are relevant to special needs housing. I'm not going to go through this in detail because of our time constraints, but there are one or two that I just want to emphasize. If we're looking at stakeholder and intergovernmental relations, a special needs housing directive involves provincial governments, so that's intergovernmental frameworks, stakeholder mobilizations. Remember, we're talking about NPOs, community organizations, and community-driven housing initiatives. That's exactly what we're talking about here, because actually it comes from the need in the community around these special needs, special housing needs groups. When we're talking about spatial planning, and I was so pleased when I heard the issue of spatial planning coming in earlier, because one of the things that we've learned through our work around disability and the convention is if there's one line, if it's not accessible, it's not sustainable. Whether it's a building or a new development, whatever it is, you have to build accessibility into your spatial planning. And many of the spatial planning tools can become ways of planning and monitoring accessibility. So if we start here at the national level and we actually build that special needs housing thinking in at this stage already, then we can save ourselves a lot of trouble and a lot of cost down the line. So I think I'm hoping that I'm beginning to illustrate the point. Again, there seems to be a little bit of an embargo on talking about sanitation in this committee, but let me walk on the wild side for the moment. Sanitation is crucial around special needs housing. We heard with the recent work that the Human Rights Commission did that there are a disproportionate number of women, people with disabilities, who are affected by a lack of access to sanitation. If you are a person using a wheelchair in an informal settlement, if you are a woman who is threatened by the possibility of experiencing sexual assault every time you have to walk the 50 meters to go to the communal toilet, then a lack of access to sanitation is different for you than an able-bodied guy who has to go to the same set of communal toilets. So, in terms of this committee, what we want to say is very simple. You know the rules. If you can measure it, you can manage it. But if you can't see it, you can't plan for it. Let me tell you something about the National Development Plan. You're going to be meeting with the Planning Committee this afternoon. If you do a search, you know how you can do a search on a PDF document for certain words? If you do that on the planning document and you do that for disability or disabilities, take a guess how many times that disability or disabilities come up. Once. You can't see it, you can't plan for it. I'm really pleased that the National Department is here, because that's going to save us a fax and an email message. Now, I'm very pleased that you guys are here, because we obviously want to speak to you very urgently. We're asking that special needs housing should be integrated into all aspects of the strategic plan, not as a marginalized add-on. Yes, the women's build is important. Yes, the youth build is important. But that's not the same as special needs housing and thinking about it at this point already. And as you may have gathered, we think that issuing a policy directive that gives guidance to the provinces based on existing housing delivery mechanisms, we're not asking for more money. We're not asking for additional work to be put into policies at the provincial level, because a lot of this is happening already. This is to the provinces who are unsure or who don't know how to use the transitional subsidy, to just say, look, it's fine, you can do that. You can use the existing mechanisms. And maybe to encourage the others who are a little bit reluctant to do that. And then also, in terms of your existing delivery support programs to help the provinces develop their special needs housing. And then, because, of course, we can't leave without asking this committee something. To ask the Department of Human Settlements, as you are digesting their specific program plans about integration of special needs housing, to monitor the development of such a national policy directive, much of what we've been saying here today has been based on work that has been done by well-established organizations such as the Project Preparation Trust, and we want to acknowledge that this expertise exists, that it's there, and they would be more than happy to come and speak to this committee. And maybe to have a joint committee or a joint sitting with the Committee on Women, Children, and People with Disabilities. I know that there are members who maybe belong to both committees, to also get that perspective. And to see it from that side as well. And then, just as my very last breath, we are busy with a particular project on special needs housing policies at provincial level. Three provinces, KZN, Gauteng, and Western Cape, which will also lead to further recommendations. We are going to invite both the committee and, of course, the National Department of Human Settlements to a workshop on this to discuss our findings, and we hope that this will be within the next month or two, so we will let you know about that. And I think that's about half the time that I thought I would be taking for this, but I have to just say on behalf of both myself and Gladys, thank you very much for the opportunity. We really do appreciate that. And we appreciate the fact that the committee is, in fact, so open to speaking to stakeholders. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. No, thank you very much. I don't think we have to be on a defensive
decide on this one. I just want to speak to the members. We will recall that we were dealing with this gentleman. Let us be honest. We didn't touch this. And whenever we have a meeting with the department, we always raise this, that in their plans, there has to be something that talks to this special needs. We know that they do, but they are not doing enough. So they do have a policy, but that policy, we are not pronouncing it. It is not, you know, when it comes to implementation, even us, we did not ask the question would each provinces were here, that they can tell us in terms of making sure that there's at least a commitment to these special needs deliveries. We didn't do that. But again, you can just comment as members. Honorable Duncan? For me? Honorable Jobe?
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Jefferson, yes, thank you. I actually just want to say thank you very much, Professor Combrink and Gladys, for the presentation and the fact that he's making it your business as well. As a tertiary institution, it is really welcomed. I just want maybe to say that I was a member of the Portfolio on Women, Children and Persons with Disability. And because of the fact that we could, according to the PC's, the Portfolio Committee's mandate, could summon anybody to appear before us. And I promise you we had, within the Portfolio Committee, had a couple of, or invited some of the departments. And out of the five that at that point appeared before us, only one responded, Chairperson. And I want to make use of that opportunity by saying how, sad it actually were, because the big question I've asked within the Portfolio Committee is for each national department to give us a breakdown of their service delivery in terms of women, children, persons with disability, whether it be housing, whether it be education, whether it be health, whether it be economic development, whether it be any of the 34 national departments we have. And out of the five that at that point appeared before us, only one came and responded, yes. The only response was, yes, we did not fulfill the MDG with regard to employment of disability. So many departments think that they actually only have to concentrate on the 2%, the MDG, what the MDG say, the Millennium Development Goals say that they must employ so many, have so many people employed. But it would, in fact, and I'm sure that our department will definitely be positive around responding favorably, that we do have and make place for the special needs of people with disability in the housing sector. I would want to believe that. I would want to believe that they are passionate about it, and as I can maybe only speak for myself, I will definitely contribute to the fact that we will give attention to the needs, special needs of our disabled. The last thing that I want to say is I also just want to say that the disability we must also not see as something separate. And I'm really urging that, that we don't do that, because disability doesn't mean that you're completely disabled. You're able. Within your disability, you're able. And like the disabled do say, nothing without us. Nothing about us without us. That's right. So let's rather see it as an inclusive process rather than, looking at it from an exclusive position. Thank you, Chair.
Getting vicious here. Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I think the Chairperson is absolutely correct. And to our utter shame, I must say, we didn't raise this thing yesterday. And it was a big presentation with everybody present. However, I want to thank you for you being proactive and bringing this to our attention. And I must say that I'm one of those people who believes that we should be dealing with all these issues in our normal run of the committees, you know, the gender and the disability and everything. But there you go. We've slipped up very badly on this. I want to just ask you, you say that this has been operating in KwaZulu-Natal now and Gauteng and Eastern Cape. You've listed the people whom you regard, you know, that would fall within this category, and they may not necessarily all be requiring some special attention to houses. You know, some of them would it would be a normal house. So really, what you're talking about is that these people are prioritized on beneficiary lists. I think that's what you're saying. I'm not sure. But can I just have some idea, these other three provinces, and I don't know if it's only KZN that had been operating since 2001, where the other two are included in that date, but how that works. And, I mean, I come from KwaZulu-Natal, and I've worked in an informal settlement. I've seen people in wheelchairs in those houses, and it's painful in the extreme. And the sanitation, I don't even want to go there. I think it works mainly in terms of just broadly speaking, the elderly and people in wheelchairs, and not extended to all these others that you have here. Can you give us some indication of how those that are working, how they work?
Thank you, Chairperson. I also wish to thank the presenters for the information that they have given us and also for shaking us up, if I might put it that way, in terms of dealing with the situation of people with disabilities and so on in the area of human settlement. I think we tend to lead it to the Women's Committee. And we tend to forget that actually it cut across all the departments, education, health, and so on and so forth. I've never thought of it that way, I must say. But the presentation has awakened me up. But I wanted to find out whether you've ever discussed this issue of the policy, a national policy, with the department itself. And if you have, what was the response of the department? And I don't want to ask, if not, why didn't you? Because I think you have brought it to us now in order to process it in a way. The second one is a comment actually. I think it's very clear that what you are asking is for a national policy. A national policy on this issue that it should be developed. But now I'm a little bit confused because the chairperson, who has been in this committee for a very long time and has got all the experience and all the information about the work of the committee, she says there is a policy. Maybe I need to be clarified on that one, because I would have said if there is no national policy, for me, there shouldn't be a problem in discussing, you know, that issue, and maybe depending on the department as to whether they think it is feasible or not, and therefore coming up with a policy which can then be implemented at all levels. I think your concern is that it should be a policy that affects all the provinces. That's what you are saying. Otherwise, for me, Chairperson, it would have been interesting if, for instance, we could have had a longer session, maybe with a presentation like you are suggesting, provinces where this is working, KZN, Eastern Cape. I come from the Eastern Cape. I'm actually curious to know where this is happening in the Eastern Cape. I live in a town where there are two, I can just think of those now, there are more, but I can think of these two homes for the elderly, and so on and so forth. It would be interesting, you know, to go into more detail, for instance, as to how, if you like, for instance, the people you are listing here, the range of people who need this assistance, and among them you mentioned, for instance, the people with HIV and AIDS, and so on and so forth. I think for me it would be interesting to say, yeah, we've got them in our families. We are staying with them from day to day. But you are talking about those that need the assistance. So what kind of people would those be? What would make it necessary for them to go to that home and all that kind of thing? I know it's not a discussion for this meeting, but I'm saying what I'm trying to encourage here is if it was possible for the committee to have another session with the you or the NGOs that are dealing directly with this issue in the other provinces. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much, ma'am. I think I will give Neville to just briefly unpack the National Housing Code on this matter. But the point is clear that even on our side, as the portfolio committee, we are not playing our role. Because I believe when the department comes before us, we need to ensure that during the evaluation, we need to check, is there any provision? Because those lists, those provincial departments, and they present their business plan, definitely they should know if there are people with disabilities who would, because the subsidy, we know that the subsidy is not the same subsidy quantum. There's that provision. So when the department processes budget, definitely it is accommodated, but do the provinces utilize it appropriately? So that is why I say we need to strengthen our oversight as the portfolio committee. Then I'm not saying there are weaknesses somewhere in the department, as we have all agreed that there has to be a need to review the policies to cover the human settlement perspective, not housing. Neville, can you just brief us on that one?
Yeah.
And then,
thanks, Chair. Chair, currently in the code, we've got a policy that caters for disabled persons, not the wider context of special needs. So there's a disabled policy. It's a variation. It's for a household where a family member or a beneficiary is disabled. It applies to existing houses as well as new houses. So if in the event of a house that's been constructed or families moved in the house, subsequently a person becomes disabled or one of the family members, it gets catered for. Chair, the issue is that it's not that this matter has not received attention. I don't think we've done enough, and I think we agree with that. So there's I think there's marked room for improvement, particularly. I think the issue here is that, for example, I know in Gauteng that there was a percentage that we applied or that was applied to disabled persons or people with special needs. So, for example, you know, people, I'm not sure if people know that the Sparrow Ministry's home for HIV children and families was developed out of a subsidy. I mean, government doesn't get credit for that, but it's just an anecdotal point. I think the point was that one of the issues that we need to deal with, and it's not only this department's responsibility, it's not a departmental responsibility, but there's some action, is just the whole coordination of it. Because one of the things that you'll go back to Gauteng, and Gauteng provincial colleagues will tell you that there is this amount that's available, but the fact of the matter is the take-up and the ability for the disabled community or special needs community in terms of mobilization, in terms of registering knowledge, information, all those kind of things, that's where this. So you know, it's between the policies. So the policies there, it provides it, but the issue is when it has to be applied. That's where the and I think it covers the whole issue about just how we deal with it and the access. But what we can do and indicate is that through our policy unit and governance framework, Louis indicated he'll form part of that team that you want. So the department will. I think it'll benefit us and
cover broadly now the issue of special needs.
The special needs, the research that they're doing. I think, you know, like I said, we've done some, but we haven't done enough. I mean, that's. I think the issue that in our strat plan, it was an issue that was, you'll see, we spoke about special needs needing to be enhanced. So it's about a directive from the minister in conjunction with this portfolio and how we manage that. That will go a substantial way. The funding issue is there. I mean, the program's there, the policy is there. It's just between ourselves as national and the province and the municipalities.
Thank you very much. I think just as a last word, just to say that because the group of special needs is so varied, the solution in terms of housing needs has to come from a range of options. If you're looking at physical disabilities, yes, very often that variation that is there in the policy can be used. What has been happening in the other provinces, including KZN, is that in order, for example, to build a foster home for AIDS orphans, I know that is one of the examples, they made use of the so-called transitional subsidy. That is one of the ways of accessing a subsidy to build something like a group home. And although at the time it wasn't entirely clear whether the transitional subsidy could be utilized for that, at the provincial level they made certain adjustments to be able to do that. And my understanding is that is also the way that it's working at the Gauteng provincial level, and Eastern Cape as well. I wouldn't be able to give you the exact details of the Eastern Cape project. I think it's Port Elizabeth, but I think for that reason it would be really useful to actually get the experts in. Again, what exactly the subsidy is for depends on the particular project. It can be to prepare the project, because depending, as Neville said, on where the project is, you often have to put quite a lot into project preparation. For example, it can be getting the architect's drawings for the group home, preparing the site, making sure that everything is in place around the operational, because you have to get the Department of Social Development and Department of Health to all work together on that particular project. And as we know, that's not always the easiest thing in the world. So it really depends literally on each particular project. So they all have to be tailor-made. There's not a single answer. And that is why it's so important that there is something at national level that does give provinces the directive to say, look, this is something that you're allowed to do at provincial level, obviously within parameters. They can't just give them carte blanche. But to say to them, it's okay for you to do this and to use these mechanisms to develop special needs housing policies as might be appropriate within this province.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, thank you very much. It's a work in progress. We are still going to meet to engage, and we think those special research people, we can invite them to have discussion. Thank you very much for coming before the portfolio committee. Honourable members, thank you very much. Let's meet at 2. Let's meet at 2 p.m. I can't decide this because we are going for a strategy. Let's meet at 2 p.m. Good social cluster, Nanseka. Planning commission meeting. Oh, it's here. Nothing on the phone. Oh, it's changed. Oh, we are going to meet here. No, it's 2 p.m.
Todos los años.